Some things are just better together. Chips and salsa, sports and friends. Breezeline Internet and mobile. Get gig internet with a free month when you order online, plus a free mobile line for a year. It's everything you need at home or on the go. Visit breezeline.com today.
Next Level Pet People give their dogs next level protection from parasites with NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. The one-and-done monthly treatment protects against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. NexGard Plus comes in a tasty beef-flavored chew, so you don't have to use next level tricks to get your dog to take it. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventative. Talk to your vet about NexGard Plus for next level protection for your dog.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
It's Culture Club time. Delighted to be joined by debut novelist Louise Hegarty. Her first novel, murder mystery story, Fair Play. Thank you very much, Louise, for joining us.
Thanks so much. I'm delighted to be here.
Tell us, before we get to all your Culture Club choices, tell us a bit about the book. What's it all about?
So Fair Play opens on New Year's Eve 2022, and there's a group of friends. They've gathered at a very fancy Airbnb in the Irish countryside, and they're there to ring in the new year, but they're also there to celebrate their friend Benjamin's birthday. He's going to be his birthday is the next day on New Year's Day. So they're enjoying themselves, and they're also playing a murder mystery game, which is devised by Benjamin's sister, Abigail. The next day, everyone wakes up except for Benjamin. And then the story splits into two, where on one hand, we're following Abigail in the weeks and months after her brother's death. And on the other hand, we are following Abigail while she is starring in a murder mystery of her own with its own detective and its own Watson and suspects, and it's the grand reveal.
Okay, so it's an unconventional murder mystery, is it? You've been a little bit more complicated and complex, perhaps, in the approach you take to it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the idea is to take that kind of familiar structure of a Agatha Christie style murder mystery and using that to like explore the emotions around grief and around sudden death.
Are you a big fan of murder mysteries?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I grew up watching a lot of Poirot's and Miss Marple's on television and reading detective novels. My parents are also really big fans. So that's kind of where the idea came from originally.
What's the attraction of that type of genre?
You know, it's a funny thing. I mean, on one hand, it is a form of escapism. I mean, it's good fun. I think there's kind of the puzzle element of it is really good as well. That, you know, someone dies and you're given all these clues and you have this kind of array of suspects and you're trying to figure it out before the detective in the book figures it out. And I suppose there's also, I mean, the original kind of golden age detective novels, they were coming after the First World War, where people were looking for, I suppose, a form of escapism, but also a gamification or a sanitization of death, where people have been dealing with the trauma of the First World War. And we're looking for like a familiar narrative to explain away tragic events.
But the format has endured well over a century, hasn't it? Between novels, which we still get plenty of, movies that you've made reference to, TV shows as well. But then how difficult is it to find something new, something different, while at the same time retaining all of the elements that are familiar with people?
Yeah, I mean, definitely it's something that comes back, especially with the pandemic. People kind of turn again to Agatha Christie and cozy crime. I suppose what I'm trying to do in Fair Play is using that structure, but making it more applicable to modern life and also an individual story of Abigail specifically dealing with her brother's death.
I love the phrase cozy crime. That's, explain that, because I came across that in another book recently.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what those Agatha Christie or Dorothy L. Sayers would be referred to, even though, I mean, the funny thing, of course, is that people are being murdered.
Exactly, and it's cozy crime when you're killing people.
Yeah, but I think like more kind of modern day, like Richard Osman, they're kind of cozy crime as well. And I suppose that's kind of an aspect of them is people are dropping dead, but no one's really that fussed about people being murdered around them.
Or a bit like Knives Out things as well.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Will this be optioned by Netflix or somebody, do you think, your story?
I mean, it would be very exciting if it did. There's nothing on that yet.
You've been really writing, mainly writing short stories up until now, though, haven't you? This is your first novel. Why have you moved to the longer form?
I suppose, well, I wrote this, or wrote the first draft of it in about 2022. And really, it was just because I just had the idea for it, and it was a novel-shaped idea. And I hadn't really had that kind of idea before then. Everything I'd been writing up until that point was short stories.
But this has given you, I understand, the opportunity to go full-time into writing.
Yes, I had a day job up until last year. But I mean, that was one of the best things about the getting the book deal is that I now write full-time.
Okay, well, let's, Louise, get to your choices for the Culture Club. We always start, even with the writers, with music. And tell us about the first single that will occur. You're a bit young maybe for singles, but tell us about the first single that you can remember buying.
Yeah, I don't know if I have bought many singles in my life. And I was trying to think, and I'm not sure if this was the definite number one single I bought, but it was definitely around that time, and it was...
It's the first thing you can remember.
Yes, the first thing I can remember. And it was I Try by Macy Gray. And I can definitely see like the cover of the single. I definitely remember having it. And I'm sure that was kind of one of the first ones I bought.
And why did you want that?
I think it was a really big song at the time. And I think I can also remember the music video as well. And I think I, you know, it's funny. I hadn't really thought about this song maybe since I had bought it, but it's a great song.
Let's hear a bit of Macy Gray, I Try.
I believe that fate has brought us here, and we should be together, babe, but we're not. I play it off, but I'm dreaming of you, and I'll keep my cool, but I'm feeling I try to say
so that was the first time in a long time, is it, that you turned back to hear that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, favourite album. You've given us one, Bubblegum by Mark Lanegan. Tell us about this album, why you've picked it.
This is an album, it was actually released, I mean, nearly 21 years ago, I think now. And it is an album that I have listened to more than I'd say most albums. Mark Lanegan... He sang with a band called Screaming Trees, who I wasn't particularly familiar with and I didn't really listen to. And this was, I think it was, this was his third solo album. And it's his voice, he's got one of the best voices. And it's, this is just such a fantastic, fantastic album.
Okay, the track that we have, we're going to play an extract from, is called Wedding Dress.
I'm dying. I'm gonna fall to my knees and I'm crying. Will you visit me where my body rests? Will you put on that long white dress?
Mark Lanegan, who I have to say I'm not familiar with, I've just been looking up. Apparently he died in Killarney a couple of years ago.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. He actually moved to Ireland. I'd say it was kind of very early 2020, just before the pandemic. But unfortunately, he did die here as well. Yeah.
His voice is very sort of Nick Cave sounding, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And he put 12 solo albums. Is that the only album of his that you've gotten into?
No, I've been listening to his earlier Network, he had an album called Whiskey for the Soul that was released in kind of maybe 1990, 1991. That's also a really great album. And he sang with a lot of different bands and stuff, so he kind of popped
Queens of the Stone Age and the likes
of
that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Favourite band? And you've gone for one of your current favourites. Tell us about a Swedish punk band called...
Viagra Boys. Yeah, definitely my favourite band of recent times. They just had their most recent album came out last week. Really great band, really great songs. Have a sense of humour about them, as you might imagine from their name. I'm actually going to go see them live at the weekend, which I'm...
Where are they playing?
They're playing in the Olympia on Friday. But definitely one of my favourite bands of recent times.
Okay, well, the new album is Viagra Boys, and this is Man Made of Meat. Okay, that's different. Tell us a bit more about them.
I kind of came across them kind of by accident. I think I was listening to something on Spotify, and you know, if you start getting recommendations and they came up. But I think, I mean, I just really like the songs, but I do like the fact that they don't take themselves particularly seriously as well.
The lyrics are quite detailed. Is that something as a novelist that you look for in music as well?
Yeah, I think music, I probably come to the sound first and then the lyrics and stuff, but the lyrics are definitely very important.
Tell us about the best gig you were at.
So I had to think about this for quite a while because I've been at a lot of very good gigs, but there was one that stood out from memory, which was David Byrne and St. Vincent at Electric Picnic in 2013. And it was, they had done a collaborative album, I think probably the year before. And it was one of those gigs where, I suppose, especially part of a music festival where you're seeing a lot of music and a lot of bands who are really great. There was something just very obviously better about them and about that gig. It was in one of the tents. They played stuff from their album, and they also played Talking Heads and some St. Vincent songs as well. There's something very impressive about seeing people who are just very obviously excellent and very obviously better than most other people at what they do. And it was just an absolutely excellent gig and great atmosphere as well in the tent.
We have, not from the Electric Picnic, but from when they were performing in Maryland in the United States on the same tour. This is performing Who? Listen to more of that. That's a great live version of it, isn't it?
It's fantastic, yeah.
Okay, so that was David Byrne and St. Vincent Electric Picnic in 2013. Let's go to movies and tell us about the favourite movie that you've picked, one from long, long before you were born.
Yeah, so I've chosen The Apartment. Maybe the film I've seen the most. I mean, if it pops up on television somewhere, I always have to watch it. I'm a big Billy Wilder fan in general and a big Jack Lemmon fan. Shirley MacLaine in this film is so excellent and so endearing. And it also is a film, I think it probably has one of the best endings as well.
What's it about?
It's about Jack Lemmon is working in a big office where Shirley MacLaine is actually working as an elevator operator. And he has this kind of deal going with his bosses where they use his apartment for their affairs, their extramarital affairs. And it is a romantic comedy. Shirley MacLaine is one of the women who's having an affair with one of the bosses. But it kind of shows you as well, I suppose, romantic comedies, especially nowadays, maybe they're a little bit lighter. But this is a substantial rom-com.
With a serious undertone to it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, let's hear a clip from it. This is Jack Lemmon as the insurance actuary CC Baxter and Shirley MacLaine as the elevator operator Fan Kubelik.
Good morning, Mr. Kirkland.
Morning, Miss
Kubelik. Good morning, Mr. Baxter.
Why, Miss
Kubelik? That's all. Take it away.
Watch the door, please. Blasting off.
What did you do to your hair?
It was making me nervous, so I chopped it off. Big mistake, huh?
No, I sort of like it.
You got a Lulu.
Huh? Yeah, better not get too close.
I never catch colds.
Really? I was reading some figures from the Sickness and Accident Claims Division. Do you know that the average New Yorker between the ages of 20 and 50 has 2.5 colds a year?
Now that makes me feel just terrible.
Why?
Well, to make the figures come out even, if I have no colds a year, some poor slob must have 5 colds a year.
Yeah, it's me.
Should have stayed in bed this morning.
I should have stayed in bed last night.
19. Watch your step. And watch your hands, Mr. Kirkby.
I beg your pardon.
One of these days, I'm going to shut these doors on you, and 20 next.
Aunt Kubelik, boy, would I like to get her on a slow elevator to China.
She's the best operator in the building.
Yeah, well, I'm a pretty good operator myself. She just won't give me a tumble, date-wise.
Maybe you're using the wrong approach.
Yeah, a lot of guys around here have tried it. All kinds of approaches. No dice. What's she trying to prove?
Well, could be. She's just a nice, respectable girl. There's millions of them.
Listen to him. Little Lord Fauntleroy.
Jack Lemmon did a lot of work with Billy Wilder, didn't he? Things like Some Like It Hot as well, with Tony Curtis and Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, he did, yeah. I love Jack Lemmon. I mean, he's so funny and charming, but also has that kind of like everyman attitude towards him.
Are you a big movie watcher?
I am, yeah, yeah.
And old movies?
Yes, I suppose so, yeah. I mean, I do love Billy Wilder, actually, anything he does. But I'm a regular cinema goer.
And what about theatre? We ask everyone for a play, theatre show, musical. Tell us about the one you've selected for us.
So this is one I saw about, I don't know, maybe 2 months ago in London, Inside Number 9 Stage Fright. And it's Inside Number 9 was a television show on BBC, an anthology television show. And this is their stage version of it. And it's kind of a goodbye to the show as well, which has finished on BBC. And it's...
What was the show about, the TV show?
So it was an anthology show. So every single episode is completely different cast, theme, plot. They had one episode without any dialogue. They'd have episodes that would be kind of like a gothic horror or a science fiction. Each episode would be completely different. So the stage show is kind of, it's a goodbye to that, but also, and so they kind of use various elements of the show that you would be familiar with from the television, and they're doing it live. And it's just incredibly imaginative and inventive and fun and funny and sad and occasionally scary. And it is one of the best things I've seen in a long time.
Okay, we don't have a clip from that. That's Inside. Where did you see it in London?
It was in the Wyndham's Theatre.
Okay. A book. I'm sure there are loads of books you could have selected for us, or authors. You've gone for The Savage Detectives by Robert Bolano. Tell us a little bit about this.
This was a book that was originally published in the 90s, but it was only translated into English in, I think, 2007. So I would have read it maybe in a year or two after that. It was the first book, I suppose, as an adult that really, really grabbed me. It's told in three parts, and it's a lot of these very young poets who were trying to track down this famously reclusive poet from the 1920s. The whole middle section of the book is told in a polyphonic narrative. There are over 40 narrators from around the world. And that maybe sounds a little bit too...
Sounds difficult.
Yes, it sounds difficult, and it's the reading of it isn't. The reading of it is incredibly enjoyable and propulsive. And there is that kind of... It's not a detective story, but obviously there's the mention of detectives in the title of it. And there is that idea of a mystery that they're trying to solve. They're trying to find this poet.
Let's hear a bit from the opening of The Savage Detectives.
November 2nd. I've been cordially invited to join the Visceral Realists. I accepted, of course. There was no initiation ceremony. It was better that way. November 3rd. I'm not really sure what visceral realism is. I'm 17 years old. My name is Juan Garcia Madero, and I'm in my first semester of law school. I wanted to study literature, not law, but my uncle insisted, and in the end, I gave in. I'm an orphan, and someday I'll be a lawyer. That's what I told my aunt and uncle, and then I shut myself in my room and cried all night. Or anyway, for a long time. Then, as if it were settled, I started class in the law school's hallowed halls, but a month later I registered for Julio César Álamo's poetry workshop in the literature department, and that was how I met the visceral realists, or visorealists, or even vice-realists, as they sometimes like to call themselves. Up until then, I had attended the workshop four times, and nothing ever happened, though only in a manner of speaking, of course, since, naturally, something always happened. We read poems, and Álamo praised them or tore them to pieces, depending on his mood. One person would read, Álamo would critique. Another person would read, Álamo would critique. Somebody else would read, Álamo would critique. Sometimes, Álamo would get bored and ask us, those of us who weren't reading just then, to critique too, and then we would critique, and Álamo would read the paper.
Why is it you say that was the first one that really, first novel that really grabbed you as an adult?
I'm not quite sure. I mean, I think it's probably something to do with the writing. It's very easy to read, but also it is substantial and very layered in terms of the writing, in terms of the novel.
When you're writing yourself, how much time do you get to read and what do you look to read? Do you read other murder mysteries for inspiration?
Yeah, I mean, when I was writing Fair Play, I definitely reread a lot of murder mysteries and read around murder mysteries in terms of essays and articles and things like that. When I'm writing, I still try and read, and I kind of have time during the day where I will just read, but I try not to read things that are maybe too similar to what I'm currently writing. I don't want to be overly influenced if I'm currently in the middle of writing something.
I can understand that. It must be difficult, actually, to make sure that things don't leak into what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay, television. Move on to television. What sort of things did you watch when you were a child?
So I was initially going to choose Buffy the Vampire Slayer because that was something that I watched a huge amount as a teenager. But I decided to say Veronica Mars instead.
Tell us about Veronica Mars. Remind me of that.
So Veronica Mars, it's effectively a noir detective series, but it's about a teenage girl in California, and it has a Scooby-Doo detective adventure of the week. But then there's also kind of an overarching mystery, and it was a show. It just really well written. Really fun, really interesting puzzles and mysteries to solve. I think at the time, I don't know how popular it was. It was always being threatened with cancellation, and ultimately only lasted three seasons. But it just an absolutely fantastic show.
And that stuck with you?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Your main choice of for what you've liked in recent years is one that I've tried a couple of times to get into and couldn't get into, despite the fact that one of my best friends absolutely loves it and says it's one of the best shows he's ever seen and can't understand why I'm not into it. Tell us about For All Mankind on Apple TV.
This is a show that I really love and I feel like not enough people are watching it. And maybe it's because it's on Apple TV that people kind of haven't been able to find it yet. But I suppose the setup is that in the first episode, the Russians get to the moon before the Americans. And it's the what if that actually happens and where does it then send America? So initially where it sends them is, well, they've got the first man to the moon. Well, we want to get the first woman. So it means that for NASA, they have to invest more in female astronauts. And there's been like four seasons of it. I think there's a fifth season now coming out. Every season moves forward a decade. So the last season, it's in the 2000s. And I mean, I enjoy that kind of like what if speculative type fiction. And I think they have a lot of fun with it.
Let's hear a little extract from the trailer of season one For All Mankind.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the earth.
After thousands of years gazing up in the heavens and dreaming of this day, a man is about to set foot on the moon. Across the world, people wait with bated breath. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a live signal. There he is. The shock across the nation at this event is just indescribable. The Soviet cosmonaut has become the first to set foot on the moon.
Which, had it happened, would have been an enormous blow to American pride.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
And is that sort of central to the theme of this?
Yeah, I mean, they're then scrabbling to keep pace with the Russians. I mean, the Russians have achieved the feat of getting to the moon first, and the Americans are on the back foot.
Okay, I'm going to go back and give it another go. Third go. See if it works for me this time. Okay, cultural buried treasure. We'll ask everybody to finish up with something that they feel might have been ignored and that we should know about. And you've gone for a children's writer. Who is she and why have you gone for her?
Diana Wynne Jones is one of the children's writers, but I think she doesn't get the level of credit or the attention that she should. I mean, anytime I go into a bookshop, I always check in the children's section if they have her books. And it's very rare that a bookshop will have her books there. I mean, I think if people recognize her name, it's probably from Howl's Moving Castle because there was a film made of it. But I think for me, the books that I would be drawn to for Diana Wynne Jones would be, first of all, her kind of Crestomancy series. Which is Crestomancy was kind of a wizard. And then she has two standalone novels that, like, I think about a lot in my own writing, even though I don't write for children. One being Archer's Goon, and then another book that was really written for kind of teenagers, which is called Fire and Hemlock. Incredibly imaginative, inventive. Her writing is great. The way she plots things is absolutely amazing. And like I say, I think about the way that she plots things in terms of my own writing.
Is this what you grew up with? Was she one of your favorite writers as a child?
Yeah, she was. I think actually it was, I think my dad bought a book of hers. And I think it was kind of a, if you like Harry Potter, you like this. Obviously, she came a long time before J.K. Rowling. But she's an absolutely fantastic writer. I would heavily, heavily recommend her.
Well, we have a clip from Howl's Moving Castle.
In the land of Ingeri, where such things as seven-league boots and cloaks of invisibility really exist, it is quite a misfortune to be born the eldest of three. Everyone knows you are the one who will fail first and worst if the three of you set out to seek your fortunes. Sophie Hatter was the eldest of three sisters. She was not even the child of a poor woodcutter, which might have given her some chance of success. Her parents were well-to-do and kept a ladies' hat shop in the prosperous town of Market Chipping. True, her own mother died when Sophie was 2 years old, and her sister Letty was 1 year old, and their father married his youngest shop assistant, a pretty blonde girl called Fanny. Fanny shortly gave birth to the third sister, Martha. This ought to have made Sophie and Letty into ugly sisters, but in fact all three girls grew up very pretty indeed, though Letty was the one everyone said was most beautiful. Fanny treated all three girls with the same kindness and did not favour Martha in the least. Mr. Hatter was proud of his three daughters and sent them all to the best school in town.
That's an extract from your buried treasure, Diana Wynne Jones and Howl's Moving Castle. Do you think, Louise Hegarty, will you ever write for children, or are you going to concentrate on the genre of murder mystery?
I think writing for children is actually incredibly difficult, more difficult than people think. And I mean, I'm working something at the moment, but it's also not in the murder mystery genre.
Second novel.
Yes. Yeah.
Very good. Well, congratulations on the publication of Fair Play. And thank you for taking the time to join us here on the Culture Club. Louise Hegarty, it's been great having you.
Thank you so much.
That's it for today's programme. Big thank you to my production team, led today by Orla Kearney, with Liz O'Neill, Evan Meehan, and also Micheál O'Connell and Thomas Balfe looking after sound. Paula McSweeney is up next, and then we'll be back tomorrow at 4:30. Until then, for me, Matt Cooper, have a very good evening.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Some things are just better together. Chips and salsa, sports and friends, Breezeline internet and mobile service. Get lightning fast gig internet and a free month when you order online. You'll also enjoy a free mobile line for an entire year. No hidden fees, just nationwide mobile coverage and reliable fiber-powered internet with a free modem and Wi-Fi. Everything you need at home or on the go for video chatting, gaming, working, and more. It's a deal you don't want to miss. Visit breezeline.com today.